time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Yes, it does on a Monday, and great to have you with us. Thank you, Chad Erickson. Lots to do over the next 60 minutes of this show, a very busy show. Former NFL safety Nick Ferguson drops by a little later on, talks some NFL and college with him. Bill Bender talks all things college football coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll preview the New Year's college football playoff slate. Get his thoughts on what we saw over the last week in the bowl games as well, and talk to him about that. But we start things out in the NFL, and Sam Yarnell is here. Our final regular show of 2024. We made it, Sam Yarnell. We made it. And matter of fact, we won't be on the air for our one-year anniversary, which is January 1st of the day this show started on television. It started before that on podcast and video podcast and all that. But our first day on TV was actually January 1st of 2023 because we were nuts and said, hey, we'll do a show on New Year's Day. We're not doing that this year. We're off New Year's Eve. We're off New Year's Day back on Thursday. So you guys can watch all the NFL and college football that you can possibly stomach. All right, Sam Yarnell. What did we learn from Week 17 in the NFL? Well, we learned that the Bengals are still very much alive when it comes to a potential postseason berth. They're going to need some help in Week 18, but what a wild one between the Broncos and the Bengals on Saturday night.
Ja'Marr Chase is the most special receiver that we've seen in some time.
More than Justin Jefferson? Some Justin Jefferson folks might be hurt by that.
Sorry, Justin Jefferson folks. He never competed for a triple crown. And if Ja'Marr Chase wins it, which very much more than likely is going to, being what, 9 receptions ahead of Brock Bowers, 100 and something yards ahead of Justin Jefferson, and 6 touchdowns ahead of Terry McLaurin, all of whom are in second place in each category. Ja'Marr Chase is going to be a triple crown receiver, and it's Calvin Johnson-esque, right? Right. These are the dominant receivers that you see in the league that separate themselves from everybody else. Now, this is a weird game to bring that up, and I know, but I think that T. Higgins having the game that he did against the Broncos was a massive, massive result of Pat Surtain being locked up on Ja'Marr Chase that entire game. What makes the Broncos defense so effective, especially against dynamic offenses like that of the Cincinnati Bengals, is that they've got a, let's be generous and say top 5 cornerback in the league. I personally think he's probably top 3, but we'll say top 5 cornerback in the league, and they move him around. They move him from receiver to receiver, so that quarterback has to kind of keep up with where Surtain is at all times. Joe Burrow knew he was going to be locked onto Ja'Marr Chase the entire game, and that left T. Higgins wide open for over 100 yards and 3 touchdowns. Yeah. So, listen, credit to this Bengals offense, Jason. They have been a juggernaut all season long. And when it mattered in this game, the defense made plays.
It did. But I got to say, and I can't wait to talk about this with Nick, you still got to be so excited if you're a fan of the Broncos. You got your guy.
Yeah. Oh,
you got your guy, and you didn't even have to be at the top of the draft to get him. You got Bo Nix, and that man, oh, man, can he play. He made some great throws in that game. He's still going to have those moments. He's still young. He's still sort of, you know, growing into the role of being a franchise quarterback. But, man, did I see some things from him that I loved. The Sean Payton decision not to go for 2, I could go either way on it. I'm not going to crush him for that. Some of the play calling, though, I know there are some Bronco fans right now that are kind of crushing him for some of the play calling that they saw in that game. But, I mean, all in all, you've got to feel good about the future if you're a Broncos fan, even if somehow the wheels fell off and they lost to Kansas City and Carson Wentz next weekend. You've got to feel good if you're a Broncos fan right now about the direction of the franchise.
100%. And if you're feeling, so theoretically, to Jason's end, right, if they miss the playoffs, you still cannot feel bad about that as a Broncos fan. You have a team that at worst this season is finishing a game above 500. And quite frankly, I think if you would have told any Broncos fan that they would have been competing for a playoff spot in the final week of the season, preseason with a rookie quarterback and the way that that team looked after Russell Wilson left, I think anybody would have taken it. Any Broncos fan out there, any non-Broncos fan out there would have been like, wow, really? That's how this first season is going to end up? Credit to the Denver Broncos. And that defense is special.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Speaking of special, boy, did we see special on display on Sunday night where Jaden Daniels just does it again. Man, don't give him the football. We always talk about Patrick Mahomes. Don't give him the football in a one-score game or in a close game. Man, don't give it to Jaden Daniels. He's going to find a way to beat you. We keep seeing it time and time again. Last night, the latest example where the Commanders rally, come from behind, beat the Falcons, and Raheem Morris apparently doesn't believe in using timeouts. We learned something new last night. Raheem Morris thinks timeouts should not exist in the NFL because he had two of them with 35 seconds left, could have called a timeout, wasted 17 seconds, and then his team ran out of time, and they relied on Riley Patterson to try and hit a field goal that was well out of his range. Hell, you could have come closer to getting it through the uprights than he did in that spot.
No, I could have.
And the Commanders wind up, you know, getting a win, and the Falcons now find themselves behind the eight ball again, Sam.
Ah, yes. The battle for Hofstra football supremacy. I need 30 seconds on my alma mater here. Right. Raheem Morris, former player and coach at Hofstra. Dan Quinn spent 4 years as a coach on the sidelines for Hofstra University. And look what that football program produces. Nothing but NFL talent. To this game, I thought one of the more hilarious things to come away from this game is that video of some bar in Atlanta when Riley Patterson kicks that field goal. Everyone goes crazy. Smoke starts blasting in the air. Everyone thought they had won it. It took them 15 seconds to realize that the ball was 7 yards short of the post there. I tried to tell everyone before the season that this Commanders team had something special to them. And it's not, it is Jaden Daniels. He's great. He's awesome and spectacular and going to be your rookie of the year and 100% deservingly, even though Brock Bowers is the best tight end in the league. And we don't talk about that enough. This team as a whole, the next man up mentality throughout this entire team, Olamide Zaccheaus over the last 2 weeks has looked like a third round wide receiver who's cemented himself as a solid Z guy in the league. This is a team that is proving to you that next man up is their mentality, and they can win a game just about any which way. The Commanders are going to be dangerous in the playoffs.
And Terry McLaurin. I mean, how do we not talk about him? I mean, what a season he's had. Kind of under the radar because of all the other stars that we talk about in this league. He's had an amazing season. Fantastic finish in that game. Bright spot for Atlanta. Michael Penix, the touchdown throw to send that game to overtime to Kyle Pitts, his first in the NFL, has to give you something to look forward to if you're a Falcons fan, that they made the right decision there. We're coming back with Bill Bender. All right, we talked some NFL. We'll get back to that a little later on. Nick Ferguson will drop by the show, former NFL safety. Well, we got to talk some college football. Since we won't be on the air New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, let's talk some college football with our guy, the great Bill Bender. Bill Bender does a great job on the NFL, or on the NFL and college football for that matter. With the sporting news, he hangs out with us on Sports Wrap. Talk about the college football playoff games on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. But also I want to get your thoughts, Bill, on what we saw over the last week in just the college bowl games in general. And there are two things that come to mind. Obviously, what took place with Miami in their bowl game with Cam Ward playing in the first, you know, deciding he's going to play in the first half, throws his three touchdowns, breaks the Division I NCAA record, and then decides, hey, you know what, guys, I'm good. Not gonna play. Opt out for the second half, apparently. And Miami goes on to lose a close game. What seems to be the consensus around the college football universe around that decision?
I think it cuts both ways. I don't know that this will impact his draft status. Critics might say so.
Mike Florio does.
Yeah, and I don't know that that would sway me one way or the other. He will get asked about it during the NFL draft process, no doubt, because at the combine they ask all sorts of questions. And for me, it's a tough sell in some ways because he hedged and it backfired. Had he played and Miami been a little more forthright about the intentions and said, hey, look, we're going to play him for a half, see where it goes. If he breaks the record, great. And then we might put Emery in the second half. I think that would have sold. But because there's been no clarity in the post game, and I think it's fair to criticize a guy, you can no longer fall back on the life-changing money argument because NIL exists. He gets paid. You should be held to that standard. I mean, could you imagine if the NFL is probably a bad example in week 18, but if Jordan Love just decided to sit out in a game that the Packers were trying to win, I think we would I can't imagine what social media would look like.
Does Mario Cristobal have to come out and be more specific and transparent, and will he?
Well, he should. And I don't know, because we don't know. It allows for us to run with so many theories. Did his agent tell him not to play at halftime? Did he just do it on his own? Why was he standing on the sideline? Should he have been in on the final drive? All of those things. And if Mario Cristobal just afterwards said, listen, we love what Cam did for the program. We were 10 wins in the regular season. We felt like we didn't want to jeopardize his future in the second half, and we got Emery some more reps. I think we all would have went about our day, and it wouldn't have been a controversy. So in some way, he kind of evaded that question in the post game. Iowa State won the football game. That didn't help. And it contributes to the bulls are meaningless argument that I hate, because I think bull games mean something different to everybody.
Yeah. Sports bettors probably weren't very happy either on that, Sam. Go ahead.
No kidding. One game that a lot of people were tuned into on Saturday, Bill, the Valero Alamo Bowl between BYU and Colorado, obviously with all the insurance policies and Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders both playing in that game, and BYU playing all of its starters as well. Shedeur goes out and doesn't look good, less than 180 total yards of offense, the two interceptions to go with the two touchdowns. Do you think that there's any chance that a performance like that impacts a quarterback like his draft stock?
No. I mean, there's he played in the game and he struggled, and wherever he goes in the NFL, I think he's going to struggle. I think it's admirable that Colorado played their guys. And it's admirable that BYU played their guys. It meant something to both of those schools. And for Shedeur Sanders, when he gets to the NFL, he's going to play for a team that probably has a very bad record this year. And the way that he took sacks in college, took hits, stayed in the pocket, has some leadership skills one way or the other, has some maturity. I don't want to say maturity issues, but when he does things like this and hold that gets a reaction. And I think he'll be fine at the next level, surprisingly fine. And if I was drafting a quarterback out of this class, I would take Shedeur Sanders first.
Wow. By the way, before I get to the playoff games and get to what's going on New Year's Eve, hats off to UConn. They beat North Carolina at the Wasabi Bowl. Jim Moore Jr. has done a terrific job revitalizing a program that looked like it was basically on its deathbed just a few years ago after Randy Edsall departed stores. I mean, I just want to make sure to get that in. I know they're an independent, and everybody's going to say, who cares about UConn? I care.
But there you go. You're telling me right there that Bulls mean something. And I watched the Fenway Bowl, and they came out and looked really good in the first half. North Carolina did not look good. The ACC, by the way, 1-9 in bowl games. It's been a miserable bowl season for that conference. I love how we say it's meaningless, then we use their bowl records to prop up and punch down conference strength. We do that. That's 100% happens every year. But good for Jim Mora Jr., good for the UConn football program that I think they found their lane, and their lane being an independent and scheduling how they want, and not, you know, this is a program, as you know, Jason, that was going to consider dropping football a couple of years ago, and now they're winning 9 games and winning their bowl games. And I think they can be successful in that lane as long as Jim Mora Jr. is there. He's a really good offensive coach.
Give me a thought on Penn State here. You know, this Penn State-Boise State matchup, the Verbo Fiesta Bowl on New Year's Eve on ESPN. What are you going to be looking for early on?
Running game, both ways. Two nasty run defenses, two strong running games. I mean, Ashton Gentry will be the focus. And how much success does he have against Penn State? Is it that one where they can stay patient and maybe it's 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, and then he busts a 40-yard run? You know, Maddox Mattson doesn't throw a lot of interceptions, but he hasn't faced a pass rush quite like this with Abdul Carter and the Penn State defense. So, and then on the other side, can Boise kind of keep the Cinderella thing going? They are the original Cinderella, in my opinion, from the BCS era on. They're a team that's that I think it's so fitting that they're in this spot at the Fiesta Bowl. You're going to see a lot of Ian Johnson replays. But, man, they got to get the running game going, and they do have to slow down Nick Singleton and Catron Allen.
Also see a couple of Kellen Moore replays out there here and there. Bill, my question is, we talk so much about the rushing offenses for both of these teams and the prowess of both these defenses. In the last 40 seconds we got here, can you explain to me why Las Vegas is expecting so much offense in this game? We've got a total of 53.5, but everything I'm hearing, it's like this is going to be a ground and pound game where teams are running up and down the field, not a lot of airing it out.
Yeah, 31-21, I think, is about where I have it. So, I mean, when you have they've been pretty good about those. In these playoff games, I think it's just to hang in the game as long as they can and see if they can make Penn State and Drew Aller make a couple plays in the air. But if they can't slow down Allen and Singleton, it could be a long night.
We'll have more with Bill Bender on the other side. We'll get to the New Year's Day college playoff games next. Let's take it to segment three on this Monday edition of Sports Wrap, New Year's Eve Eve. We talked about the game going on New Year's Eve, playoff game between Penn State and Boise State, quarterfinal matchup. We got three on New Year's Day. Bring back Bill Bender. Sam Yarnell hanging out with us too as we get into these bowl games on New Year's Day. And let's go chronologically. We got Texas and Arizona State, Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. What do you see there, Bill Bender?
Well, Texas's defense is a bad matchup for Arizona State. And we really wish Arizona State could have played early in the earlier this month and just kept that regular season momentum going. With Cam Scadaboo, can they get a running game going against that Texas front? Is Jordan Tyson going to play? I haven't checked to see if that's going to happen. Sam Levitt was feeling it in his pregame availability. He said, yeah, I think I'm the better quarterback here. So all of those things are going to make Texas angry. They've got so many difference makers on their defense. Jahde Barron, their secondary is really good. Anthony Hill. And Arizona State's going to have to slow down Texas's running game, and they're coming across the entire country. This is the one, to me, that has the highest potential for a blowout if Texas doesn't turn the ball over. I feel a lot about this one like I did about Clemson.
Bill, just to be clear, Levitt is not better than Quinn Ewers, is he?
He had a really good back half of the season. I like his mobility. It's that's sneaky. You know what that means when they say sneaky about it. It's become a code word, unfortunately. But he does have some escapability, too. And he had three or more touchdowns in six of his last seven games. And he's played well. Now, Quinn Ewers, I think we get so transfixed on Arch Manning that we forget that Quinn Ewers is pretty good, too. You know, he has some erratic moments, but he played very well in the Clemson game. And when you have all those receivers on the outside, it's basically don't mess it up.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Pasadena, the Rose Bowl, Ohio State and Oregon. My most interesting point about me, the weather in this game, because it's the only outdoor game of the quarterfinals that we have, supposed to be clear, maybe a couple of clouds, mid to high 60s. Bill, who do you think that plays towards more of an advantage for? Is it Oregon or is it Ohio State?
I think neither. I cannot wait for this game. I think it's going to be a fun rematch where they both get up and down. The thing about Oregon the last time they played Ohio State is they are the only team that threw the ball down the field on the Buckeyes. And they did it without fear with Evan Stewart. And he had a huge game the first time around. Treshawn Holden, Tej Johnson, even tight end got involved. And Ohio State did not have a sack. So Ohio State has to get after Dylan Gabriel, make him make some bad throws. And then on the other side, Ohio State, obviously our last impression of them, unbelievable on offense and unbelievable knockout punch. And by the way, Jeremiah Smith, like I said last week, pretty good player. So I think they're going to throw to him. This is going to be a shootout, an instant classic. In that backdrop, two Big Ten teams, can't wait for it.
Where do you potentially see the biggest difference between the first matchup and this matchup?
How they adjust to Oregon throwing the ball down the field. Do they come after Dylan Gabriel more? Do they bring Sonny Styles down into the box and blitz a little more than they usually do? How creative is Jim Knowles? I think he's on the spot in this game. It's because, yes, Ohio State did win a big game against Tennessee, but that, and they didn't give up a ton of yards against Michigan, but they gave up yards at the wrong time. So I think this is a Jim Knowles game, whereas all the criticism going into the first game was on Chip Kelly. This is a big game for Ohio State against a high-powered offense. Can they slow them down? And I think that'll be on Jim Knowles and that Buckeye defense. What adjustments do they make?
Can you make the argument, real quick, Sam, can you make the argument that the national championship game is this game?
You can, but that's skipping a few steps to me. I would probably pick the winner of this game to win it all. And I did pick Oregon to win it all, so yeah. But Texas will have something to say about it. The two teams in the Sugar Bowl will have something to say about it. The best thing about this quarterfinal round that we forgot about when we were griping about all the blowouts in the first round is the five or six teams that I think can actually win this thing. And I think it's five with a, you'd have to make a really strong case for Penn State to put me on that list. They're all in the playoff right now. And that's what, but four of them are playing against each other.
Bill, real quick, just on the Ohio State thing. Last week we saw Davison, I can't pronounce the last name, Igbinosun, make an incredible play on that interception. He's a junior this year. What is the pro outlook for a guy like this in a DB class that we haven't really talked about this year?
Well, Igbinosun and Denzel Burke, their tape, this is the one they show. NFL scouts watch these games. So how do they do against these Oregon receivers? I think they were stunned by Oregon the first time because of their early season schedule. They didn't play a receiver like Tez Johnson or Evan Stewart. And then it's like, oh my gosh, I got somebody that can actually run by me. And I think that's the biggest adjustment for this game, because if Ohio State's corners hold up, they'll be in good shape.
All-State Sugar Bowl, Notre Dame, Georgia. As excited as you are for Ohio State and Oregon, I'm really excited for this game because there's so many unknowns, you know, with the change at quarterback, obviously, with Carson Beck being done and making himself eligible for the NFL draft, obviously, with the injury that he suffered. What we saw from Notre Dame, an impressive win against Indiana. How do you handicap a game when you have a quarterback for Georgia that nobody really knows a lot about?
Well, that's what we'll find out. I mean, it's a limited sample size, and for me, can Georgia run the ball? If they can run the ball, that takes some of the heat off Stockton. He also can run a little bit, and high percentage passes to the tight ends, Delp and Lucky, that will be a part of their game plan. Notre Dame, I mean, I would probably straight up pick Notre Dame and not feel even remotely bad about it had Riley Mills not got hurt. It's a big loss for them because Georgia's pretty good on the interior. Notre Dame loses one of its best interior defenders, and Howard Cross was still working back from an injury. So watch that early. Does Trevor Etienne get done early? How long did Kirby spend the last couple of weeks telling everybody that nobody believes they can beat Notre Dame? It's like he's Lou Holtz in this scenario, telling his team we're no good. So, I mean, it makes for a classic game. And for Notre Dame, do they have the guys on the outside to make a couple plays against the Georgia secondary? Because they can't just run the ball. I think they will have a very similar game plan that Georgia Tech had with Riley Leonard and those running backs. But it has to be more than that against this Georgia team in that environment in the Sugar Bowl. It's going to be a really fun game. You're right.
We got about 20 seconds. Sam, you got anything real quick, or you want me to?
No, Bill answered my last question in that last answer, so I'm out of everything, Jason.
Who do you think wins, Bill?
I got Georgia by a touchdown.
Slumfest, come on. Instant classic.
Georgia, Texas, Oregon.
No,
Invitational.
Nah. Notre Dame wins.
That's juicy. I like that.
You broke my heart. All right. Bill Bender, Sporting News, College Football. Always appreciate it, my friend.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
We'll talk to you next week. We're coming back with Nick Ferguson next. Welcome back to this Monday edition of the show. Final show of the year. Best of Sports Wrap. Best in Sports 2024, coming your way on Tuesday and Wednesday. We're back on Thursday with a recap of all the college football playoff action. Thanks again to Bill Bender for hanging out with us from Sporting News. Let's bring in our friend Nick Ferguson. I'm going to talk NFL with him. I'm going to talk college football with him. I got a whole bunch to run through with you, Mr. Ferguson. Boy, oh boy. So I assume you went back. I was texting with Nick last night when I watched Raheem Morris just botch the end of that regulation. He's got 35 seconds left. He's got two timeouts. They get a first down. They're out around midfield, and they just decide to run up to the line and run another play, which winds up being an incomplete pass, which stops the clock anyway. They could have called timeout with a ton of time left, get in a couple of more plays. They had two, so they had sort of the bonus timeout. What did you make of the way that Falcons-Commanders game ended?
Well, you know what? It was really disappointing to see the clock management because Penix throws a great pass, and the receiver catches it at the 45. He can't get out of bounds. So I'm thinking, you know, they're going to call a timeout. Even the broadcaster say, okay, here comes the timeout. But the timeout never came. And at that point, it was like 30 seconds. And I'm like, okay, if you call a timeout, you're able to get up to the line, give Penix another opportunity because, let's be totally honest, this is kind of like Penix's first opportunity on the road being an NFL quarterback. And obviously, he doesn't have all these plays in his head where he can run up to the line and call his own plays. But also, these are the things that you practice. This takes me back to being around Mike Shanahan, and we would always practice situational football where it's like, okay, well, either you're behind or you're ahead and you need a touchdown. And the offensive line and everyone else had a sense of urgency. Did you see how many of those guys were trying to scramble back to get to the line of scrimmage? You took away so much time and so much opportunities. And the biggest thing was after Penix completed a pass, his head turned to the sideline, looking for them, right? He was waiting for them to call a timeout, and it never really happened. So when you look at why the Falcons lost, that was one of the reasons, because you didn't use two timeouts.
We've seen this throughout the season, and it feels like, I don't know, maybe we're just paying more attention to it and seeing it more now, but you've got all this stuff with analytics, and on this down you should do this, and on fourth down from here the percentages say this, and you can't get something as simple as calling a timeout correct. I don't understand. Are guys overthinking this? Do they need somebody standing next to them who's just helping them with clock management? Like, what is going on here?
Well, to be totally honest, there is, every team has a guy. Either that person's on the sideline, or more importantly, that person is in the press box, right, with the other coaches. That person knows all the rules and all the situations, and sometimes the coach will defer to them. Okay, well, what's the situation? What do we have? But here's the biggest thing. You already knew that the game was somewhat, you know, where it was. So you should have prepared Penix on the sideline. Here's what we have. We have two timeouts. We only have about 40 seconds in the game. If you make this completion, hurry up to the line of scrimmage and I'm going to call the timeout and we would have other plays ready to go. So that's the part that I'm baffled because, I mean, Raheem Morris has been around some great coaches in his time. And I'm like, well, how could you be ill-prepared for this particular moment? And then to listen to him try to explain as to what was his reasoning behind why he didn't call the timeout, because he was trying to save him. Coach, you can't take him with you. They don't carry over like minutes and phone calls.
No, it was bad. End of the first half. He went into the half with a bunch of timeouts too. It is a head scratcher. All right. Broncos Bengals. Look, let me ask you something. If somehow the Broncos lose next week to the Carson Wentz led Chiefs, at least we presume, if they were to lose that game and somehow miss out on the postseason, is it still a successful year for the Broncos?
Yeah, it is, because let's be totally honest. No one really gave the Broncos an opportunity to beat in this particular point. And then think about what people said about Bo Nix coming into this year's draft. Well, the Broncos did get a quarterback, but I was at Empower Field at the draft party when J.J. McCarthy went off the board to Minnesota, and all the fans were just so deflated because they wanted J.J. McCarthy, and they there was a light clap when Bo Nix was taken, because no one really expected him to kind of be there and didn't see him as being a quarterback. I was like, man, you guys should be happy. You finally got a quarterback. And if you know anything about Bo going back to his days at Auburn and you watch him at Oregon, the guy's got some ability. And some of the fans were still upset at the beginning of the season because they were like, well, we're not sure that Bo is the guy of the future. And I'm like, well, right now, Sean Payton is painting him in the box. He's not allowing him to be that same player that he needs to. And we've seen over the couple of weeks that Sean started opening up the offense a lot more, and we saw exactly who Bo could actually be, because Bo was being criticized locally and nationally because people were saying, well, he doesn't have a strong arm. Well, those two touchdown
couldn't
passes.
Couldn't fool me.
Yes. Wake up. Yes.
Threw it 60 on the fly. He threw it 60 on the fly.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, JP, when you go look at it, he was rolling to his right, and he didn't even have his both feet squarely on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got plenty of arm. I wouldn't worry about that. How did you feel about the way the game was managed late with the decision not to go for two there?
Man, you got the momentum. Bo Nix just makes a hell of a play. Go for it. And I know Sean Payton saying, look, if you got the tie, they know that, hey, listen, we still get into the playoffs.
Yeah.
But you can't play for the tie. Even if you go for it and you miss it, guess what? You still have another week to win the game against Kansas City.
We're hanging out with Nick Ferguson, our man. Former NFL safety, does a great job in Denver, does a great job on all things football. Hanging out with us on this Monday edition of Sports Wrap. Don't go anywhere, lots more to do. Stay with us. We keep it moving on this Monday edition of the show. Talking football with Nick Ferguson. Do some more NFL with him here. Also get in couple of thoughts with them on the college football and the playoffs quarterfinal round this weekend. Let me ask you, if it's true that Aaron Rodgers basically pulled himself out of that game late in the third quarter with the Jets and Bills yesterday, is that it? Is it a wrap at that point as an organization if you see something like that, or if you're the next head coach coming in or the next GM coming in? What did you make of sort of Aaron Rodgers' decision to say, enough's enough. We're down 33, we're down 40, whatever it is, I'm done.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed as a guy who played for Bill Parcells and New York Jets. I was disappointed because when you go into a game like that, we go in the game as a team. We win and lose as a team. And I just felt as though, well, Aaron Rodgers looked at it, well, the score was what it was. We were not really moving the ball effectively. We didn't really have a lot of points. Let's go ahead and defer to Tyrod Taylor. I mean, if you were being that much of a teammate, you would have done that early in the season when you were having your struggles and giving them an opportunity. The thing that made it worse was that Tyrod Taylor came in and he scored, right? Which made it worse. But I think the die has been cast already. We didn't really need to see the game in Buffalo to know that Aaron Rodgers' time is over in New York, and I would find it very disappointing if the Jets organization decided to bring him back thinking that they would be able to change things. That's not going to work. I mean, Aaron Rodgers kind of got to a certain status where it's my way or the highway, and rightfully so. He's earned that being an MVP of this league and winning a Super Bowl. But at the same time, it's really hurt your team. Everything that Aaron Rodgers wanted to do, you did, and it didn't work. And it's time for the Jets to just kind of cut their losses, go in a different direction. And the bad part is that this whole situation with Nathaniel Hackett, firing Robert Saleh, bringing in so many of the guys who played with Aaron Rodgers with the Green Bay Packers, it's essentially set them back 4 years. Just think about that. You've been set back 4 years in a division that has Josh Allen, who's not going anywhere, and Tua, if he can stay healthy, Miami's still going to be competitive, but you still don't have your quarterback.
Nick, is tanking real? We talk about it in the context of, you know, teams trying to get a better draft pick and trying to sort of better their organization or give themselves a chance for a high draft pick. We talked about it all year with the Giants. And I've talked about it and tweeted about it and said, look, you know, this whole year they've been basically doing it right. If they're going to suck, they're going to make sure to suck and give themselves the best opportunity to get the best possible draft pick. In this case, Shedeur Sanders. Does tanking really exist in the way we think about it? Is it something that's discussed in the locker room? Is it something that's discussed amongst players? Are there coaches sort of nudge? Is there a team GM or an owner coming down? we talk about it so much in the context of it existing. Does it really exist the way we think it does?
Yeah, it does. I hate to kind of say it, but it is true. And when you get a peek behind the machine and you see how the sausage is made, it's hard to unsee it. And the players in the locker room, it's not something that they discuss because every player wants to win. But I understand it from an organizational standpoint. You realize that your team isn't where it needs to be. You don't have the personnel to compete with other teams in the conference, outside of the conference. It's only one way to make that happen. I mean, there's no transfer portal here, JP.
Yeah.
So in order to acquire those types of players, you have to draft and develop. And the only way to get there is you have to lose games. So there is a discussion that's had by certain people like, hey, if we want to get to where we need to get to, we have to do this. Remember the whole situation with Brian Flores and the Miami Dolphins?
Mm-hmm.
That was a real situation, right? We didn't want to admit that it was real, but it was a real situation where in order to acquire Tua or to get that high up, you had to lose a significant amount of games. So from a player standpoint, that's not something that we go out there and we try to lose games. But an organizational standpoint, that conversation is happening inside the organization, whether it happens with the owner and the head coach or it happens with the owner and the GM. It's happening.
Nick, I got 2 minutes left. The college football playoff game in these quarterfinal matchups that excites you the most is?
I like Oregon and Ohio State. I mean, those two teams played already. Dillon Gabriel and the Ducks were fantastic. And I know Ryan Day is looking at this situation saying, hey, man, I took a lot of heat after that Michigan game and how my players reacted. This is an opportunity to get some get back and actually just kind of make everyone feel so bad about how they criticized me and our team by not only beating Oregon, but winning the whole damn thing.
Give me a reason why it winds up different this time than it did the first time around.
Because you get a chance to, you know, watch that opponent, hone in on what you did wrong. And usually at this time, you're facing a different opponent with different challenges. But here's an opponent that you faced already. So it's going to be important for Dan Lanning and his crew to throw some different wrinkles at Ryan Day on both sides of the ball. But I think that Ohio State, they're upset as far as how the fans were saying that Ryan Day needed to be fired, how things would handle after the Michigan game, and the fact that they lost to Oregon. So to me, this is going to be one of those Clubber Lang, Rocky Balboa types of fights.
Who wins Notre Dame and Georgia? Please say Notre Dame. Please say Notre Dame.
Well, you know what? I don't really like Georgia because I went to Georgia Tech. So I'm going to say Notre Dame, but I'm a little hesitant because Notre Dame is taking advantage of the ACC because they're not fully invested in the ACC. So they're using the ACC to get to this point. Right. So I don't want either team to win, but in this case, since you asked me, I'll go with the Irish.
Nick Ferguson, former NFL safety, hanging out with us on the show. Love to talk to you, my friend. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
All right, just about time to put the wraps on this Monday edition of the show. Again, a reminder, best of 2024, Sports Wraps Best of 2024, coming your way on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. Back on Thursday to recap all the college football playoff madness and a whole bunch more. But without any further delay on this Monday edition of the show, time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends, Sam Yarnell. Can't we all just get along? You know, normally we like to make fun of NBA fights because they're not really fights. They're guys dancing around, yelling at each other, a little bit of shoving. We had a couple of legitimate fights over the last few days. It's the holidays. What's with all the mashugana? I don't understand. You've got the Suns and the Mavericks going at it. You got Nurkic getting knocked around by Najee Marshall. Then you got Tyler Hero getting into a scuffle with Amen Thompson last night. And Hero got decked too. He got thrown down. That's what it was. He got thrown down. The Heat wound up winning the game, but man alive, what's going on in the NBA?
Yeah, so of all of the major four sports that we talk about on the show, The NBA is the one where I understand fighting far and away the least and think there are copious arguments that it should never happen. The strongest of which is that, oh my gosh, you're an NBA player. The 13th guy on the bench makes Josh Allen money. What are we doing here? An NBA vet minimum contract is massive. You're making so much money and you still have some desire to go out there and get involved in extracurriculars? It makes no sense to me. See, in football, I understand it. Contact sport, physical nature, every single play, you're hitting someone. That can boil over. Baseball, long season, things get drawn out over the course of a series. You understand it, tension can boil over. The NHL, they're not making any money. And it's a very rigorous contact sport. Fighting almost seems natural there. In the NBA, light contact in the sport of basketball. Again, massive, massive amounts of money going into NBA contracts. No reason to fight in my mind.
By the way, Tyler Herro, such a fake tough guy. He got thrown down and then he just danced around and let everybody else pick his fight for him. I'm like, come on, Tyler Herro. He's such, I just can't. All right, give me
guy
some.
Guy gets one rap song written about him and all of a sudden
like,
thinks that he's.
Seriously. What do you got for Lions and Niners? I mean, look, the game means nothing to Detroit at the end of the day. What matters is what happens next weekend. Makes it kind of tough to handicap it, doesn't it?
100%. What's even harder is the game means nothing for San Francisco. It's true. They're eliminated from everything. It's so funny to me that late July, early August, when the NFL was putting all this together, they were like, week 17,
what they
Monday
do again?
Night football, Lions, Niners, man, we're going to have a heavyweight bout. And what did it turn into? The least meaningful game of the week. It's crazy to me. I think it speaks to how week to week this league truly is. Yeah. And as Jason says so frequently, how much parody there is in it. At the end of the day, I'll go Lions team total over 27.5. I'm not super confident in it, but it's plus money, and I'll take my plus money where I can get it right now. Listen, this game, I'm not expecting a ton of, and I won't blame you if you go under the 50.5.
I think I would go under 50.5. That's where, if I'm leaning towards anything, that would be where I am leaning. Real quick, by the way, MVP odds updated. Josh Allen at -320 on FanDuel. Lamar Jackson at +250. Saquon Barkley at 16-1. Joe Burrow at 30-1. I think Joe Burrow should be getting more love, but... I know.
Yeah, I know. 100%.
There are two guys in the history of the NFL, at least that when I did my research on this, that have won the MVP with a team that did not make the playoffs. Johnny Unitas, O.J. Simpson were the two to do it. So there is precedent for it. It's not going to happen this year, though.
It won't. But I do agree with you. You should replace... probably Joe Burrow's number with Saquon Barkley's. You should probably then replace Sam Darnold's number with Joe Burrow's and make Saquon Barkley 150-1 because I'm sorry, he's not winning the MVP. He was never winning the MVP. The last running back to win the MVP, in this style of season, Jason mentioned his name. It was O.J. Simpson. I'm not against running backs winning the MVP. The thing is, in the era in which we're currently talking, it's a quarterback award. It's Josh Allen's award. Josh Allen's your MVP.
Last but not least, tough weekend in sports. Greg Gumbel passed away at the age of 78, and it's another one of those people that was sort of the soundtrack of my life growing up, watching sports, going all the way back to his days on MSG Network, where he worked in New York. Through his time with CBS, he briefly went to NBC before going back to CBS. One of the legends in the world of play-by-play and hosting. Greg Gumbel passed away this weekend after a battle with cancer. He was 78 years old. May his memory be a blessing. I've seen a lot of amazing tributes to him. And that's basically the best you could do when you can't find anybody with a bad thing to say, that's about the best you could do, Sam.
The guy was so renowned and had such a prolific career in sports. He was not only the voice of Jason's childhood, I remember listening to him every weekend growing up with the NFL on CBS. A true pioneer of the industry.
Absolutely. Thank you to our guests, Bill Bender and Nick Ferguson. Thanks to you for watching. Sam, we'll see you back here on Thursday. Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year.
There you go. We'll see you back here on Thursday for another Sports Wrap. Best of 2024 tomorrow and Wednesday.